The oxygen doesn't actually help you breathe any better. It just keeps you warmer. And after about 6 hours of climbing, I start getting cold. I'm like, man, that oxygen bottle's out. When I changed it out to the regulator, I still was hearing the oxygen leak out. So instead of having like 6 or 7 hours of oxygen, I had like 30 minutes.
Holy shit.
My whole deal was, do I go to the summit and risk it? Or do I just go back down and be safe?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Hot Boxing. I'm Evan Britton.
I'm Mike Tyson.
Mike, yes. We've got a fucking icon in here,
man,
dude.
The fuck, Joby?
This guy, Joby O'Gwynn. Welcome to the Hot Box, my brother. American Mountaineer, wingsuit, jumper, base jumper, fucking adrenaline junkie. It's good to have you here, man.
Man, Job, what's the deal with you, man? What do you want to do this? Why are you so death-defying?
Death-defying. I like that. You know what, Mike? That's a pretty good way to look at it, because what I'm doing every time I do one of these jumps, for example, is you're saving your own life. It's like you're committing suicide and then saving your life with a parachute. Mm. But here's the deal. I grew up in a small town, Shreveport, Louisiana. And I always wanted to do something special. And I started traveling when I was like 18 years old, and I went to Africa, and I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro.
Oh,
I love that. I want to do that.
That was the start of everything for me. I'd never been overseas, never went anywhere. And so I met some guys there. They started talking about the seven summits, the seven highest mountains in the world, the one on each continent that's the tallest. And I said, how many guys you think have done that? And the guy said, I don't know, 4 or 5. I'm like, wow. In the world, 4 or 5 guys?
In the history of the world.
In the history of the world, 4 or 5 guys did that? I'm like, I'm doing that. And so by the time I was 26 years old, I had done all 7. I was the youngest person in the world to do it, and just a handful of guys.
What are the 7 summits?
So basically, the 7 summits break down as the tallest mountain in each continent. So like North America is Mount McKinley in Alaska. Mm-hmm. South America is Mount Aconcagua in Argentina. Kilimanjaro in Africa. Mount Elbrus is in Russia, is Europe's highest peak. And Mount Karstens Pyramid is in Indonesia. So that's the kind of the Australia, Eurasia, that area. Asia is obviously Mount Everest. And then the last one that I actually did was kind of in that order was Mount Vinson in Antarctica.
Whoa.
Which was really quite the adventure and was really a cool way to finish the 7 summits.
Listen, when you're climbing the mountain, do you see any animals up there?
See, I've had that question a bunch of times. Sometimes in some places, if you're in Africa, you see all kind of stuff up there, all kind of crazy birds and everything and little mountain lion stuff. If you're in Antarctica, not so much. It's just cold and quiet. There's just nothing up there. Everything's just frozen solid. So it kind of varies. But yeah, when I was in Russia, we saw some big mountain lions up in the Black Forest up there when we were hiking around. That was pretty cool, you know? So it just depends on where you're at.
So how do you prepare? There's a lot to talk about, but I want to kind of hit it one step at a time. How do you prepare for taking on Mount Everest? What's the preparation?
Well, I have to say the first time – I've done it 3 times. So the first time I really – I was 24 years old. I was young, man. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I had climbed a few mountains, but I just never been to Asia, never been in the Himalayas. So I just figured I would just run all the time.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, man, it's not doing enough for me. So my dad worked in an office building that was like 30 floors, like the tallest building in Shreveport. So I put a backpack on that, like 40 pounds of weight, and I just started running up and down the stairs. Every now and then I'd mow over some guy who was going from one floor to the next, like some law firm dude carrying files or something. I'd come down. I couldn't stop because I was, you know, so heavy, and I'd just blast through this guy and be like, oh, sorry, let me buy you a beer later. But that's what I did, and it made – after a while, you get carved out of wood just hammering away like that. I lifted weights and did stuff like that, but I usually stayed pretty lean, you know, 175, 180, something like that.
So your cardio is just through
the roof. It's a big cardio. Like now I'm 200, so now I'll whittle it down a little bit when I go this spring. I'll lose weight till I get shredded down to about 190, and then by the time I get to base camp, I'll have lost enough weight to be about 180. Mm. Then when I go to the summit, hopefully everything works out that way, then I'll probably be down – I'll have lost like 30 pounds by the end of it. It's like going to space. You actually are actually going to space. You're piercing the troposphere at 29,000 feet on Everest. You're going that far up. So wow. It's like space jump.
So the only thing that can survive that high is a certain goat or the eagle, huh?
The birds. Yeah, check this out, Mike. When I was up there the first time I went up there, I saw this. I thought, man, I got the best view in the world. I had a really beautiful day. It was a gorgeous day, like really clear. I could see all the other peaks and everything, like you would envision the view from the top of the planet would be. And then I saw this big raven, this big black raven, just fly right down on top of me and flew down the southwest face. And I thought, that bird has the best view. I want that view. And so that's why I was like, I got to figure out a way to get to the top and then jump off and fly away just like that bird did and land safe at the bottom, which I figured it out. Yeah.
So how did you – so then what was that? That's the wingsuits.
Basically, I found wingsuiting through a random project that I did for National Geographic. I was filming a show where I did all these different extreme sports, car racing, bullfighting, bull riding, big wall mountain climbing, extreme whitewater kayaking, big adventure races. And one of the things I did was base jumping. So I had to learn how to base jump. Usually I had like a week and I had to learn the stuff and I'd have a coach and they'd show me and then I'd put it together and do something big at the end. The base jumping thing took me a month. But I said, what's the biggest base jump in the world you can make? They said, the north face of the Eiger in Switzerland. I'm like, then I'm going to go there. I'll do that. They're like, well, you can't, nobody's done that. You can't do that. That's like, takes years. I'm like, give me the right trainers and the resources. They gave me $3 million. I'm like, in 1 month, I'll be jumping off the Eiger. Watch this. In 1 month, I was jumping off the Eiger three times in one day.
Ooh,
boom, boom, boom.
How did that feel the first little wee?
Woo, man. That
the balls go in your throat.
Oh yeah. Oh. All the way. You feel it right here. Yeah, all the way up. You can't believe it. Just standing there. And you're like, but I'm sure you can relate to this. When you're like that, when you're a little scared, that your training comes back to your mind.
Absolutely.
Right?
And then you relaxation comes in.
Yeah. Then you start thinking, okay, here's how I'm gonna handle this. You know, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do this. And it works out. Wow. When you're right and you train hard, it makes a difference. Preparation.
Yeah, so much of life is about preparation. Would you say that preparation, because you're not a normal dude, man. You know, what is it that when you were a kid, was there anything you did like this that you brought this focus to, this intensity? What was your childhood like that prepared you to be a guy who could absorb great amounts of information and training in a very short period of time and go out and do the expert level version of that?
That's a good way to put it. I always had a knack for if I was interested in something, if I really wanted to do it, I would focus very hard on that. And I would find a way to do it. Like when I said, I'm going to go climb Mount Everest, people say, how are you going to do that? That's real expensive. It takes all this money. I mean, how are you just going to go over there and do that? But I found a way. What I found was, though, if you break things down, like if you take Mount Everest, for example, and you break it down into
steps.
How
do you break it down?
You just start picking. Like I would look at the mountain and say, man, there's no way anybody could get up there. But then you go, okay, well, maybe if I put it into sections – I could do that. Like there was a mountain that's the sixth highest mountain in the world called Choyu. It's in China. And I wanted to climb it. And I wanted to climb it faster than anybody else. And my friend said, how are you going to do that? I said, well, I'm going to climb it over 3 days. I'm going to go to the summit. Then I'm going to come back down. I'm going to rest for 2 days. And then I'm going to take it in sections. And I'm going to do it all in one go in one day in 8 hours. I'm going to get there in 8 hours. And people usually take 3 or 4 days to get up there. But I would section it off to the point where I'd say, okay, I'm going to take 150 steps, and then I'm going to keep breathing the same way I'm breathing now. I'm not going to try to catch my breath. I'm just going to keep going. So you start sectioning things off. I got up there in 8 hours. This is the world record. Nobody ever climbed an 8,000-meter peak that fast The last record was 11 and a half hours. So it showed me that if you break things down in the fundamentals, and that was fast. That was fast. That was really fast. Yeah, you can't believe it. So you start breaking it down. Yeah.
11 hours is fast. Yeah.
If you think about going from 17,000 feet, which is already way the fuck up there,
how do you?
All the way up to 27,000 feet in 8 hours.
Without having a heart attack.
With no oxygen, no ropes, no Sherpa from help. No radio, no nothing. Just went up there and did it. But it shows you can do big things if you break it down and then you train just like that. You did that. You break down these fundamental things where you can put it all back together when you really have to step up and do it. Makes a big difference because it gives you the confidence to know that you can do it.
Yeah. Is breathing a big part of your training?
Yes, it is. The thing that people don't realize is if you're trying to catch your breath in the mountains, you're never going to do it. Mm. It just doesn't work that way. You're just going to always be trying to catch your breath. So I came up with a system that works for me where I get into a rhythm. Like when I would run, I'd run just under a full sprint for miles so that I could get to the point where it didn't bother me to have my heart rate at 200 for extended periods of time. And then I would breathe. So when I'd stop to rest, my body was resting. My legs were resting a little bit. But I would breathe in the same pace so that I was never catching my breath. I was just going. I was just going. Then I'd count out another 100 steps and another 100 steps. And I'd stop. Another 100 steps and stop. And then break it down into pieces. The whole deal is if you don't stop that much, then you go real fast. But you still have to be really fit and strong.
And listen, I know there's something about breathing in the human mind and body. Cause if I do this, say if I do this 100 times, I will feel totally different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, my whole
barometer. If you do that 3 times.
You know, I know exactly, but say 100. Oh. My whole barometer feels so totally different. There's something different about
it. I do tons of breathing stuff. Something people about breathing. People probably think I'm nuts. My wife thinks I'm nuts. I'm walking around the
house doing
this.
Listen, I do that. I even go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And breathing. That has a lot to do with you taking a shit, everything.
Yeah, it works for everything.
Yogi's talking about that.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, that's big time.
Anything.
Yeah.
Relaxing. Anything, just breathing.
Yeah.
Deep breath. It's incredible.
So that's got to be because you're not.
What is the connection with that, though?
Well, breathing in through the nose activates the prefrontal cortex and all your executive functioning.
Yeah.
So you're in your best, you're brought into your, you're just your highest self.
That's
brought into your highest
to do
mind.
With healing, though. Because sometimes when I'm aching for weights or something, then I do that breathing and it goes up and I feel my pain. It goes, and it just helps. It helps.
It helps.
Me.
If you can harness that, it's like,
I just don't understand how but it works, you know. It's just
I don't know how, but it works.
It's the elixir of life, man. It's prana. The yogis talk about it. It's pure energy.
Right.
And so you're fucking, but you're not just like staying at one altitude. You're going up, oxygen levels coming down, and you're keeping your breathing in that mode.
Yeah, it's a meditation.
Yeah.
You're just in a rhythm and a meditation. And once I could always find that rhythm, then I could just keep going. I was lucky like that. I just was able to focus in a way. I also actually think that my ability to deal with like the conditions had a lot to deal with living in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Like when it would get hot, people always think the mountain's always cold all the time. It's like sometimes you'd be up there and all the sun is reflecting off it. It gets hot where you're like – taking everything down to a t-shirt and it's really hot. Most guys, they wilt down and I could keep going. Like I was used to that hot, humid weather, you know, like that was nothing to me.
I don't like that.
I don't like it.
Louisiana, New Orleans.
Brutal.
No, it's brutal. It's brutal.
Brutal.
But I was used to it. So it helped me. I thought that helped me out. You know, I wasn't tired from
it. When you're in the swamps, you can't breathe. Imagine being up in that altitude.
Well, then imagine. So you know, you can't breathe. It's very difficult. But then you take into account what Joby does and you focus on your breathing and your breathing becomes a part of how you live. Imagine how powerful and strong your body would be. Like shaking your hand, dude, you're like made out of steel. You know what I mean?
Like I still have to work out like 10 hours a day.
I'm sure. But, you know, I was like, oh, because I was kind of curious. What is a guy's physique like who fucking hikes Mount Everest, you know, but you got to be fucking strong. You got to be strong. Powerful.
Yeah, you do. You know, you have to be ripped out and ready to to do it on that level.
For sure.
Like
for
any, there's a lot of guys could be really decently fit and go up there with support. But if you're up there by yourself, like me, with no ropes, no Sherpa, no oxygen, nothing.
That was the first time you did it. You did it with nothing.
I did it with nothing. I was up there all by myself.
With just
the
oxygen
tank. You see these guys up there now, there's like 100 guys up there. It's like, man, when I was there, I was the only man on the mountain.
Dude,
it was awesome.
Crazy,
it was
man.
Great. I broke the trail. Usually you would have ropes like now. You'd have multiple ropes going to the summit, from the base to the summit. Whereas when I did it in 99 for the first time, I'm like this little skinny 24-year-old.
Who was the first man in history to ever summit Everest?
A guy named Edmund Hillary, Mike.
He's
from New Zealand.
Mm.
He was from New Zealand, and he took one of the Sherpas with him. So the two of them got to the summit.
What year was it?
1954.
Wow.
Is that the first time anybody ever thought
that was
about
the
doing
first
it?
Time. Well, some dudes in the 20s tried, and they died.
Still
they're still up there. Exactly. They're still up there.
Guys hanging from some.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Old skeleton. You can see the stuff couldn't have the weather and stuff.
Wait a minute.
They're all ill-equipped and stuff.
Oh, they were wearing like leather boots and stuff. Hobnail boots. Yeah, yeah. They didn't. They had no chance.
All right, let's take a quick break from the show. Hope you're enjoying the episode. You know, if you're sitting around at the house looking for ways to stay fit like me, like Mike, who works out every single day, we just found a cool, different way to get the best cardio workout ever, man, for a fraction of the cost. It's called CrossRope. It's the sleek, weighted jump rope system that makes working out at home fun. I just got my jump ropes, man. They are crazy cool. And Mike, you jump rope all the time.
Jump rope is very important for me because it has a lot to do with rhythm and timing. And the longer you do it, the more rhythm and timing you possess. And
Mike, like we were talking off the air, jump roping is the best cardio you can do. And think about it. You can do it staying in one place in your house. It's perfect.
Oh, absolutely. The best perspiration, best cardio workout you can get besides running.
Exactly. So look, we got our ropes over here. I'm going to get mine, I'm going to go with the Get Strong because the rope's a little heavier. But me and my girlfriend, we're working out. You know, I mean, we're not running and we're up all the time and eating way too many quarantine snacks. So this cross rope jump system is exactly what we needed. If you're ready for a new cardio and full body home workout, visit crossrope.com/hotbox and you got to check out this jump rope system. And here's the best part. You're going to love the whole experience, but if you don't, they offer a 60-day risk-free guarantee. Okay, so there's pretty much, you got nothing to lose. Okay, download the CrossRope app. They're going to show you all the different jump styles that you can use to train. And hey, man, be like Mike. Remember that? Listen, the home workout experience just got reinvented with CrossRope, man. Work out your glutes, your booty. That's the same thing, right? Your core, your back, your shoulders, all of it, man. No fluff. It's just good old-fashioned fun and great exercise, right? If you're ready for a new cardio and full-body home workout, visit crossrope.com/hotboxing. Get up to $40 off CrossRope sets plus free shipping when you check out today at crossrope.com/hotboxing. That's HOTBOXIN, crossrope.com/hotboxing. Mike, you got your CrossRope. You said you're going to teach me some jump styles, right?
Absolutely. Expect a call from me.
You've seen some shit on the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us the story. I've heard it now like three times, but I want to hear it from you. Of when you went up the mountain, time by yourself, and one of your oxygen tanks wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And what went down and what was going on that day?
It was 2008, and I was up there for – this was the third time I'd been up there. So I kind of knew what the score was, I thought. Basically what happened, though, I was trying to do the fastest ascent of Everest. And my goal was to be like less than 10 hours from the base of the route to the summit. So I took off in the afternoon. A friend of mine said, hey, on the radio, you should go now. All right, I'm going now. He told me when you get to the high camp at 26,000 feet, there's some tents. Then they have my initials on the tents, and you can go inside. And if it's too cold or too windy, you can grab some oxygen bottles and a mask. Everything's up there. Just take what you need. So by the time I got up there, it was dark. The wind was just blasting me, just hammering me. And it it's cold. The oxygen doesn't actually help you breathe any better. It's not like a scuba tank going underwater. It just keeps you warmer. Like it just kind of makes you, gives you more to not feel so cold, makes your head clear a little bit. So I grabbed some bottles. I grabbed two, hooked one up, put it on, put the mask on, started going up, put the extra one in there. And after about 6 hours of climbing, I'm up there all by myself and I start getting cold. I'm like, man, that oxygen bottle is out. So I change it out. When I changed it out to the regulator, I still was hearing the oxygen leak out. So I knew that the bottle didn't fit the regulator. So that was my mistake was at the tent, I didn't check that both of them fit. So instead of having like 6 or 7 hours of oxygen, I had like 30 minutes.
Holy shit.
My whole deal was, do I go to the summit and risk it? Or do I just go back down and be safe? Well, I went to the summit, of course. And as I'm taking the last few steps to the top, I start getting cold again. I'm like, damn it. I'm out of oxygen at the tallest point on the planet. So I just started kind of running down, like just making my way down. And I ran into a few dead bodies that I had conversations with because I was hallucinating and everything. But eventually I dragged myself to that high camp and got some more oxygen, put it on, got all the way down. But I did get to the summit in 9.5 hours. Still a world record.
You have to have tough psychological fortitude.
Yeah.
It was just like, keep moving. Just keep moving. Just keep moving. Just keep moving. I sat down to a body that was sitting next to me and I started chatting him up. And after a while, I'm like, man, this guy's dead. He's been dead for a long time. Yeah, he was just like a frozen dude with these blue gloves. And I was just sitting there. And I'm like, man, if I don't get out of here, I'm going to be this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. To think about it.
That's like unbelievable.
It all has to do with your willingness to die.
Yeah. What are you willing to risk?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was willing to risk a lot, all the time, for a long time.
Still?
Like I was boxing, I was that way. I was willing to risk a lot.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Kind of risk it all to get to the biggest show, you know, to do the biggest thing.
You make what you're doing a strange, no matter what it is, you make it kind of noble. Mm-hmm. A noble cause.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that very much.
Yeah, you make it a noble cause.
Juby,
why would your mind could take your place? Somebody else, man, can't even conceive of it.
Mm-hmm.
And say, what is the point? The importance of this shit? What's wrong with this motherfucker? He wants to climb it. Not only is he climbing, it's too easy that he's climbing.
He wants to do it as fast.
Now he wants to leap and jump and fly around. He wants to hang out with the fucking birds. Yeah. And then he wants to hang out with the angels.
Mm.
You know, either way, he's flying.
How do you answer that, Joby?
I think he just did it about as perfect as it can be. That's right. That's what I wanted, and I'm getting it. I'm living my dream in a huge way. If you said when I was a little kid, one of these days there's going to be a suit that allows you to fly. If you work really hard, you could master it and do those things.
It's funny that you said that because I've watched, and I'm just not that kind of guy, but since hanging around here over the years I've been hanging around here, I would be in this room. This room is decorated so different now, but it would be, you know, seats in here, couches, and I was sitting here, me and Miles, and we would just watch shit, and we would watch the suit people, and this is what I want to talk to you about. That normally, it was this young lady that was acquainted with a gentleman that was, and he died.
Mm-hmm.
But she kept going, and you know, once she dated, she couldn't date another guy that's a normal Joe. She had to only date guys that do this, and she dated quite a couple of guys that died doing that. But she would not. She can't date a normal guy like us. After dating a guy like that, you know, after dating a guy like that, she can't date a normal motherfucker. No, I'm serious.
He's right.
This is not a joke. I'm not being funny. I mean, this is true.
I'm not lying because it's funny.
And the guy that she dated, her ex-boyfriend, knows the guy that she's dating now. If he was alive, she can only be with guys that do that stuff.
It's a small world, too. It's super small. Yeah, super small.
Defying death. You know what I mean? The death-defying what? What do you want to call them? Ooh, they have to have the name. Ooh, death-defying.
You call yourself something, Joby?
Stunt man, most of the time. Figure that tries to kind of cover all the bases.
Different step. Most stuntmen, right? Most stuntmen practice what they do over and over again. You don't practice what you do. Oh, it's only one go.
There's only one go.
Only one go. No practice in this shit, dude.
There's no practice. You know, it's like just you to do it or you don't do it.
Over and over again.
Yeah. So with the wingsuits.
That's the awesomest thing they ever did.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
Listen,
so
eventually they're going to make a suit where somebody's going to be able to fly like Superman. You watch.
Oh, yeah.
Where guys can
take off and everything.
See, a wingsuit, you're only controlled when you're in the air.
Uh-huh.
But imagine when you get on the ground, you're going to be able to jump off and do it again from the ground. You just jump up and you just go start flying without going over a cliff.
I'm sure.
Imagine
they'll
that.
They'll get there.
Imagine that it's being like this. You just No, I'm serious, Evan.
I know, Mike.
Don't got to no outfit or no big old.
Around.
That thing, the jump.
It's a trip.
That's state of the art. But when that stuff comes, that stuff is going to be so in the way, all that stuff. The state of the art stuff, just jumping up and taking off and being Brazil and shit in a couple of hours. A couple of days.
It'd be like Iron Man or something. Something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how do you prep for that? How do you get into that? So you started base jumping. You did Iger 3 times one day.
I did that for the show, which gave me access to...
Now, the base jumping, though, was just you jumping off the platform.
Right.
Parachute.
Right. So when I first did it off the Iger, I had a little jumpsuit on, but it wasn't a wingsuit of any kind.
The wingsuit, they don't have no parachute.
No, they have one at the very end.
Yeah.
You still have to use it. Yeah, you still have to use that to land. I know a few guys who've landed wingsuits without using the parachute, but they're not feeling too good about it right now. But the main thing
is still here.
Actually, a couple of them are.
Okay.
Yep. Surprisingly so. They just caught a tree or this and that.
God bless them.
It's crazy, but stuff happens like that. Weird stuff. The first time when I went on that trip to the Switzerland, that was when I saw my first wingsuit. There was a guy who was the location manager, who's a really, really good friend of mine now. Mm. He was a legend, Andy West. He's like one of the first guys ever to make a base jump ever, like up in Yosemite. They were jumping with skydiving rigs and all this stuff. He had a suit. I was like, I thought, okay, my first thing was I can make money from that. Like nobody's doing that. So I take that back to Los Angeles and start showing guys this stuff. They're going to be like, there's something to this. So I thought, well, I got to do it. Now I got to get good at it. So I bought some suits. They were from France or something. I had them shipped in. They were like $3,000 each or something. But I had the sponsorship for the mountain climbing from Oakley and a couple other companies. So I had enough money to buy equipment, rent helicopters. So that's what I did for the next 3 years. All I did was jump out of helicopters every day in Switzerland with like 2 other guys filming me to figure out how do you film it. Then I figured that out.
Jesus.
And that was the technical part. Like, you know, if you're good at one technical thing, you can make money from it. You can make a career out of it. That's what I did. I wanted to be the best wingsuit pilot in the world, and I wanted to dominate the sport, and I wanted to make more money than anybody else had made from it. I wanted to get all the big shows and the Hollywood stuff. I was like, I had a plan. For me, it was a business plan. It was a serious plan, which I thought, if I look at it like that, then maybe it'll keep me alive because this is kind of a crazy man sport. But I wasn't really a crazy man. I just thought I wanted to live the ultimate dream based on flight.
That's fucking crazy, dude.
You're automatically like the coolest guy in the room when you do that. Once I had it mastered and I started pumping out videos on YouTube and stuff, people were like, holy shit, what the fuck is these guys doing?
What the fuck is this?
Yeah, they showed you that shit.
Children are woo-hoo. And some of them are crazy because some of them are these little passes.
They
go right between
them. Through those valleys.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And they're fast as hell going.
Yeah, you're going like 160 miles an hour.
Jesus, dude.
Once you hit those rocks, you're dead.
That's it.
You're vaporized.
You're nothing. You're nothing.
No. It's not a very forgiving sport. That's for sure.
But listen, I've seen people hit some bad stuff and survive, too. You can't believe a human being survived some of the hits, you know?
Yeah. The human body can withstand a tremendous amount of pressure. So, you know, you're very loose, man. You're very, like, fun to be around. You're great in conversation. And I wasn't sure how you would be because of the fact that you're constantly, you have sort of a constant relationship with death.
Does anybody love you? You have brothers, sisters, girlfriends? What the fuck is your story, man? How does somebody expect to have you for long?
I probably put my parents through a lot. I didn't realize how much I'd put them through until I had my son. He's 5 years old. He lives in Italy with his mom.
Hey, I'm dealing with that now. I must have put my family through hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my kids are not even worth nothing like me, but I must have put my family through hell. Fuck.
I know I did. Yeah. When I think about it now, I'm like, I feel bad a little bit. But my parents are proud of me that I made something. When I, you know, grew up, I got to do what I wanted to do. Like, I was living my dream, and I was successful at it, and I was staying alive when a lot of other people didn't. The mountain climbing thing took a lot of friends from me in pretty harsh ways. It was brutal.
Any bears get them?
Just.
No bear accident?
Just, like, falling off the mountain or, you know, falling Jesus for a long Christ. Way and. And I've watched guys fall off a mountain and just get blown apart and stuff. And he's just brutal and doing body recoveries. And you're in Pakistan and you go, wait, we got to get these guys out of here and stuff, wrapping their bodies up. I mean, pretty just harsh. There's blood all over the snow and you're dragging these guys for miles. And it's just like, shit.
When you go up those mountains, you see tribes of people like living in those mountains. And those
One time I was in Pakistan. I was trying to go climb a mountain called Batura 2, which was the highest unclimbed mountain in the world. It's right on the border of Afghanistan. So I'm walking through, and this guy comes out in the beard from this little yurt tent deal. He goes, hey, come here.
Holy shit.
I'm like, I'm all by myself. I'm just hiking in. My partner had already been over there. That was an Italian guy. We were going to climb the mountain. So I hike in for like 3 days. He goes, hey, you want some tea? I'm like, okay. He walks in. He goes, do you know where you're at? I said, yeah. I got the GPS. Everything's working. I'm going over here. And he goes, man, there's a lot of Taliban around here.
I know.
And I was like, really? He goes, yeah, big time. You better watch out. Just watch out. He said, probably you won't see him. You know, he said, but you're about the only white guy here, you know, in any stretch around. I said, well, what about you? You have problems with the Taliban? He goes, no, last week we got rid of the Taliban. I'm like, oh, really? How'd you do that? He goes, well, they were trying to come in and recruit some of the young guys here to, in our village, and we just went and cut all their heads off and put them on little sticks out in front of the house here. They don't come over here anymore.
Yeah, harsh living.
And I'm thinking, I'm walking by myself for the next 2 days.
That's harsh guys. Living. That's harsh living.
And think about it, man, I didn't even care. Like, at that time, I was like 30 or something. I'm 45 now. I was just Jesus, like, whatever. Man. And I was just
did that guy
cruising.
Speak English?
Or yeah, he spoke perfect English.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. People in Pakistan are highly educated, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
They speak quite a few languages.
Yeah.
They live in huts.
Hindi and Farsi and English. And
they live in undeveloped homes and stuff, and they speak a couple of languages.
Mm-hmm. He's right.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, listen, you go to Russia, you might run into a girl who speaks 7 languages. And you say, man, she, and listen, she's poor and has no money. And you say to myself, how do I get this girl in America? She's going to make me so much money.
Uh-huh.
You know, what the fuck? Is this girl? She's poor. She speaks 7, 8 languages.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, Joby, you're getting ready to do something right now.
I am.
That you've attempted before.
That we might think it's cool, but his parents don't think it's fucking cool.
No, right? They don't.
Sure.
They don't think it's cool at all. No, I'm actually getting a second chance to do something that I thought was pretty much done. 5 years ago, 2014, I went to Everest. I had an unlimited budget from Discovery Channel.
Fuck.
We spent more than most TV shows. We spent over $15 million basically to make this show, and it would have gone to far over 20 once we turned it on. But the idea was we were going to do a live show from the summit where I would jump off the summit with a wingsuit and fly down and land at base camp. They had good luck with Nick Walenda doing the high wire deal over the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. And so my show was the next show, and they poured tons of resources into it. And I was the big star, and that was great. I had actually just pitched them a documentary. They turned it into the more bigger theater, but that was fine. You know, whatever they wanted to do. I worked for them at the time. I was trying to do the best job I could for the company and the people I worked for. And they were allowing me to live my dream, and I appreciated that. So I wanted them to understand that I would work really hard to make it happen. So I did. I did everything I could. We got to base camp. Had NBC was there doing all the live transmission. Everything turned on. It all worked. It was bouncing off a Chinese satellite going to New York. And then it was beamed out to 222 countries, the entire planet, basically. Biggest live show.
Ever.
Ever, basically. And it was all me. It was a pretty amazing place to find yourself where you're the star of the biggest – this is the biggest thing that's ever happened lately on TV and everything. And I was that guy. And it was a lot of pressure. But I took it well, and I just took it as a job. I'm just going to do the best job I can so maybe I can get some more jobs with these guys, have another show, work with people I worked with were very, very good to work with, top-level professional people. And I enjoyed that high-level work, working with people like that. So it was like the biggest opportunity in my life, and I knew financially it would be huge. You know, I had a lot of opportunities that would come out of that, and it already come out of it. And the Discovery Channel deal was, you know, great. I got to buy a house in Laguna Beach. You know, it wasn't awesome. All bad.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
But basically, I was sitting there in base camp, and big avalanche came down and killed all of my Sherpa team, killed my team, and that was it.
I heard of that. And you were about to go on that journey with them, huh?
Basically, a producer saved my life. He just said, hey, are you taking the equipment up that you're going to use to jump? Because we haven't filmed you explaining that out and laying it out. I said, yeah, I'm taking it up there. He said, well, maybe if you stay one more day, that saved my life.
Mm. Do you think you owe this to them?
Mm.
Yes.
Good question.
I do.
Yeah.
I owe it to them. I do owe it to them. I can't help it. I feel that way. I live with that every day. I sent those guys to do a job, and they died. And that's on me. It is. I'm all right about it. But if I could do this, then it would be something special. And I think people would appreciate it, the story. And that's what I want to do. I want to tell a story. If people can be inspired by it, then that's good.
So do you have children?
I have a little boy, yeah. Great Solomon name. Alexander O'Gwen.
Great name.
There's a lot to live up to, but I think he will. And he's a sweet, sweet boy and a strong person.
So you're heading out there.
Yeah.
Back out.
Yeah. I'll be there in April, and hopefully sometime in the middle of May, we'll get up to the summit and make the jump. I've got better equipment this time, so I'm stoked about that.
That's good.
The equipment I use has actually been enhanced, I would say, by 1,000%. Makes it safer, easier, better for me. So I hope that'll make a big difference. My game plan for it and the project that I actually want to make is different. It's not a live show. It's a movie. It's the movie I wanted to make about my journey and my story and sharing what happened to these guys and who they were and what big heroes
you ever
that they were.
These monks up there in Nepal. Up
oh,
there?
Yeah.
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 What
yeah.
they're about.
We get blessings when we go over there. We stop in.
Yeah.
We stop in and we get the blessings from the monks in the Tangbashe Monastery. And there's another monastery closer and higher up, more near to Everest. We stop there and we get a blessing in the morning times when they do it.
That's awesome.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. It's special times. Special times up there in those high mountains like that. There's no place in the world like the Himalayas.
Wow, dude. Well, once you do this, man, you come back on the podcast. You talk to
I'd
us
love
about
to.
It.
Yeah.
You tell great. Us how it went.
I'll break it down for you for sure. Yeah.
It's amazing, brother. Well, good luck to you in that. I mean, I don't know what else to say, but you're a fucking inspiration. I really want to – I've had a dream since I was a kid to do Kilimanjaro and Everest.
Oh, well, why don't you guys just come with me? We'll do a podcast live from the summit.
From the summit?
That would not be that hard to do. You and I would have to get on the treadmill a little bit.
Yeah, people get some. It's their life. You know, my life. This is worth my life. They look at this and this is worth my life.
All right, let's take a break from hotboxing real quick to talk about our exclusive partner, BetOnline, which, of course, you know, sports is I'm like breaking right now. Right, Mike? What's your favorite sport outside of boxing?
MMA.
Well, you can bet on MMA. You can bet on poker. You can bet on everything you want with BetOnline.ag. All of the action. With BetOnline.ag, open 24 hours a day, all online. Are you a betting man, Mike?
with life I am.
Our exclusive partner, Bet Online, doesn't worry if you're missing the NFL because they have live Madden NFL, 20 simulations a day you can wager on, plus so much more. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One, Bet Online, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code PODCAST1 for your sign-up bonus.
Don't forget to use that promo code PODCAST1, and we're going to have some fun. Hey, God.
Wow, man. Well, thank you for being here.
Everything, what is our life? Yeah. Oh, we sounded good. What is our life?
No, let's keep going.
What is our life?
It's the one thing you have that's the most valuable thing. So when you bet it on something, that's it. That's all you got, right?
How do we live our life?
I mean, how do you and I live it a little different than most people. We see it different.
How do we protect ourselves from the fear of dying?
Yeah, because we haven't had that fear much in our life. I lost 16 friends in 6 weeks one time from wingsuit stuff. In 6 weeks, good friends, people I knew well and loved, and I was flying, still doing it. And then after a while, I'm like, maybe, you know.
The odds.
They catch up.
Life is, life prepares, like we were discussing, life prepares us for death, you know. It just prepares us. Life is smarter, and nature is smarter than we can ever anticipate. We react off nature without us even knowing we're reacting. Mm-hmm. This isn't without me doing this. Why am I doing this? Well, for a reason I did this, but I had them to do this. Yeah. I don't even know why. Why am I moving? Why I'm talking, you know? Mm-hmm. This is nature. It prepares us for everything. But we think that we're running the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you think you're in control. Until you're not. Control.
Right? I know this is second half, but I make that. Our ego is just one of the amazing.
Yeah.
Are you, Joby, in a constant state of just letting go of any thoughts of the future? I mean, do you just have to stay in the moment and trust the training? And
yeah, I'm just trying to be here now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's the goal.
That works pretty good for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I read that book by Ram Dass many years ago. People had it. It's wonderful. And I really thought that was a smart way to look at things, especially for somebody
like me.
Well, just the idea. The guy wrote a book, and his whole idea, it was a real simple book. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine gave it to me. You should kind of sit down and read it all at one time. So in about 10, 15 minutes, you kind of make your way through it. But the whole idea summed up is be here now. Like, don't think about what happened yesterday or in the past, or think about too much about what's in the future. But if you're really here in the moment, then you're living the best possible life because you're here. You're absorbing everything. You're getting it all.
Yeah.
Instead of letting your mind and your heart and your soul drift over here thinking about all this other stuff. It keeps you focused on things you should and can do, but it also makes it where your life really is as full as it possibly can be. I struggle with that. I think a lot about the past. Listen, it's hard for me.
Our path is just – the path is just what? Dead generations living on the brain of the living. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just think about it. We got to revenge ourselves for this. We got to revenge our race for this. We got to revenge ourselves for this and this. And we continue fighting battles in the past. Yeah. And we can never go forward in the future. You know? We always fight those generations of negative insults that we received and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean, black people got their call. Latino people got their call. Gay people got their call. The LTB people, they got their. Everybody has their call because, know why? Because they're not one yet. We are one, but we're not conscious one. We're still trying to separate ourselves. We're still trying to find things to separate ourselves. And we keep coming back to we're still one. We're still the same. And that frustrates us. And we dig and we dig and we dig and we get frustrated because we can't find nothing to separate us. Mm. And we don't want to be a part of this. We don't want to be a part of that. But the reality is we're all of this. This is who we are. And we don't want to look and face who we are.
Yep.
They don't want to say, I'm a great man, but my daughter's gay or my son is. Why is this? Why is this? Because that's what you are. We are what our children are. What we hide in conceived from people comes out in our children. Mm. And they're that way naturally. Because we live a life trying to hide who we are, have our secrets. Yeah. Instead of trying to live open.
There's a reason we don't have eyes on the back of our head. You know, we're not meant to look behind us.
No way.
It's hard sometimes.
We have to have faith. That's why we need faith.
Exactly.
That's the reason we don't have eyes. Because we have to have more trust and faith.
Yeah.
That our brother man is not going to betray us, or our sister is not going to betray us.
Hmm. Yep.
Trust the process.
That's it, man.
You can see now how, at this century, people are becoming better people now. We still got some time for some guys that's still around. They didn't mend into society well, but people are becoming better now. They're becoming smarter, you know?
Yeah.
They're questioning Christmas. They're questioning the holiday to everybody.
Yeah, they question more stuff.
They're questioning God. Why is he a man? You know, we're questioning everything now.
Yeah.
Things that we look at, how dare you question this? But they got to go on their own journey and path and find out.
Yeah, that's the interesting part, that, you know, everyone has to find it in their own time. The waking up, it's all in their own time.
And then when we make that statement about living in the moment, there's nothing feeling like living in the moment, because living in the moment, it's hard to grasp that feeling.
Yeah.
How difficult. We can't even do it now.
No.
How hard is it to live in that moment?
Yeah. Think about how hard we're right here. Yeah.
When you live in that moment, it's so sensational. Then when it's gone, you fuck what's going on. That moment, you just can't hold it.
Yeah.
You can't hold it. And then you think to hold it, how to get back. You're trying to get that feeling again.
Yeah.
But it's not something that you can get back. You got to summon it. It comes when you don't even prepare. Right. And when it's over, you say, yo, did you? Man, you can't explain.
Right. Did you feel that?
Oh, fuck. You feel like an idiot trying to explain it, right?
Right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, dude.
But it gave you a feeling that 1/10 of a second, like, woo. Mm-hmm. I can't even explain that to somebody what that is.
Well, that's like getting back to the breathing, man. That's why your breathing is so important, being tuned into your breath and breathing in and out through your nose, because that brings you into the moment.
That's how come some people, like human beings, when they really get in tune with themselves, they get in trouble. Mm-hmm. Because they can't handle that power.
It's a lot of power.
Yeah,
it's a lot of power. It's a lot of power. You know it is. Yeah,
it's very powerful.
Woo.
Yeah.
When it's all opened up.
Whoa. You say, I don't want this stuff.
No. And you get in trouble.
Yeah.
You and I are talking about exactly the same thing.
You get in trouble.
You get in big trouble. Damn it. Expensive too.
Yeah. Yeah, silent partner. Oh. Who the fuck is that?
Who is that guy?
You look at
Wait a minute.
Who said that got that $5 million? Who the hell is that? Who are they? What they look like? Is it a girl, a guy? What the fuck?
Oh shit.
Listen, I look at everything. I look at women, look at people who are looked at as enemies. Everything is, they were teachers. All those guys were our teachers. And that's what this big world is, a school. It's where we live, in one big school.
I like that.
And all of our encounters are classes.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine how many classes we endure in this life.
If you're in the moment.
Yeah.
If you're able to just be in the moment, you know, and really be in those exchanges with people, are you able to grasp the lessons?
That moment's a motherfucker. Ooh, guys.
Well,
rare.
We're too
rare at the moment.
Well, we've been, I think, in Western culture, we've been programmed to live in our fantasies and to live in our
deep. That's what I do.
Well,
I'm all in my.
Think about it, man. We're constantly, we're constantly trained to live in our fantasies and live in our own little dreams and never actually do anything with those. We're not meant to, they don't want us to, they don't want us to be the full expression of ourselves. That's why we climb mountains, dude.
What happens when, listen, I always think when I die and that's when I begin to live, I wake up and I'm around everybody and they saw me do everything I did in private. Like if I died, I wake up and I'm around all these people and I don't know if I know their names, but they saw me do everything that I hid when I was in private. Jerking off, fucking my ass, shouldn't have fucked, did something I shouldn't have did, been with somebody I shouldn't have been with. He's doing all this stuff and I'm hiding, think no one knows to this moment. And I wake up after dying, all these people saw me do everything I thought I hid from everyone.
How would that feel?
I would be embarrassed. I would be ashamed. I would say sorry for my life. I would say, listen, how can I make it?
Kind of liberated, though, a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's, everybody knows. So there you go.
You know what?
That's what happened when I took the toad. Yeah. That's why I felt liberated. I had that humiliating feeling, then it liberated.
Yeah. Well, Mike, you know, the only one that really matters is you, because you know it all. You've seen it all. You've been in there the whole time. You know everything that happened. So then, like, what does someone else's opinion of that even matter?
No, because their opinion, believe it or not, is my opinion of myself. Everybody else's opinion is the opinion that you conjured up already. You had that opinion about that stuff before that even came out their mouth. And that's why that happened, because you have to face those opinions. You have to face your self-hate, your self-doubt, your self-alignment.
Mm.
You know, your self-illusion.
Yeah.
You know, imagine after all this stuff, you know, who we think we are, who we believe we are, and then the older we get, the sicker we get, God is saying, keep on, tell me who you are. Keep telling me who you are. Mm-hmm. And then you say to yourself, at this stage of our life, we start to become more spiritual and think to God. Then you say to yourself, all the stuff I got, and you say, wow, I'm still not doing enough for God. I'm not praying enough. I'm not serving enough. You know, you always, that happens, you know, because you know, you've seen people before, you've seen your family member, you've seen them get old, you saw them strong at one time, you saw them living their life, you saw them get old, you saw them get weak, you saw them get feeble, you saw them die. And now my process is going to, how am I going to do this with dignity? Am I going to be a dickhead about this? How am I going to handle this?
About dying?
Yeah.
Or aging? Both.
I'm dying.
Dying.
You know, some people do it with dignity. Some people do it with harshness and say, fuck this, and get an M16 and start taking out other people too, because living is real complicated. It's even more complicated than dying. Dying is easy. Living is fucking horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Living.
Yeah. Yeah. In the suffering sometimes.
Yeah, but we keep living because we think we're going to get the message. Even since the biblical times, we still listen for the message. You know, we acknowledge
that. Always.
We seek knowledge to the grave. We seek it. We stay around because we think if we believe in the second coming, we're going to see something going to give us a message.
See, I think
you know, you feel me? I don't care what religion you are, but something about that second coming is kind of real. I don't care what religion it is, but something about we're still waiting for that.
We're still waiting for that.
Even though we might be scientifically aware that this can't be true, but we still are feeling our barometer wait for it. Our being wait for it. It has nothing to do with knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's who we are. Our being is our whole barometer. We could be idiots, but we know it's coming. You know?
Yeah.
We'll be waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could be idiots. Our brains could be this big, but still we have the feeling. We know it's something greater than us.
Yeah.
You know? Idiots. We don't have nothing. Whatever they call retards, whatever you are, but we still know that there's something greater than us.
Yeah.
So that makes them smarter than most of the guys that have education that believe they're greater than everything.
Hey, let's take a quick break from the show. You know, with everything going on today, you know, with the health pandemic, people's anxiety on the rise, man. You know, everybody is struggling with work and family and just the shift of the normal routine. And it can bring up a lot of emotions, man. But that's okay. It's all right. Because there is help with Talkspace. Now, Mike, Talkspace is an online therapy platform. I know you are a big therapy advocate.
Because I'm a strong believer in people getting well. Because most of my life I've been through the mental health program. And from that, I've come across, I've improved leaps and bounds.
That's great, Mike. That's what I'm talking about. Look, and it's Mental Health Awareness Month, too. You know, with Talkspace, you get the support of a licensed therapist from the safety of your home. So you got the anxiety of going out. Don't worry. You're going to stay in. Okay. And you can reach out from your device whenever something is on your mind. You can send your therapist a text, audio, picture, or video message from your phone or computer 24/7 as much as you need to. Look, Talkspace is just the platform that people out there need to help them figure out the things that are going on in their lives. Okay, so bottom line, you deserve support. Don't struggle on your own. Mike.
Yes, do not struggle on your own.
I mean, if the anxiety's building, Mike, what do you think? Talkspace is the place, right?
You have to go to, you have to talk to somebody, but holding that stuff in, you wind up becoming a slave to your emotions, and doing that, you have no control.
Your Talkspace therapist can be a dedicated support system, which everybody needs, okay? They're there to help you feel healthier and more empowered, even in these uncertain circumstances, okay? So as a listener of the Hot Boxing Podcast, you can get $100 off your first month on Talkspace. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com or download the app. Make sure you use the code HOTBOXING, HOTBOXING, and get $100 off your first month and show your support for the show.
What's your sense of God, Joby? Spirituality?
Actually, I grew up in kind of a strict sort of private church, but my parents were not too hard on me and my brother in that way. They didn't really hammer us, and they got out of that. And so we had some structure there that was interesting where I got to read the Bible all the way through and know quite a lot of all the stories and the things that really mattered. So I appreciated it for that. Mm-hmm. There were some good people in it too. But the way I would say it is that the mountains are my church.
Mm.
And that's where I go to pray. And I do a lot of praying when I'm there because I need a lot of help usually.
And if you listen, the mountains talk to you.
They do.
The woods, the forest, they talk to you. I know people think I'm crazy, but man,
oh, absolutely.
I've been through that and I'm like, ooh, and you know that you're nothing.
They know that
absolutely.
You're nothing.
Oof.
Yeah.
Well, there's vibrations all around us. I mean, everything is vibrations. And there is no sound until the vibrations hit our eardrums, and then it transfers a signal into our brain that creates a sound.
Yes, it tells us when to be. We're in the forest. We're in the truth. It tells you when to be afraid. And, hey, be careful.
Yes, exactly.
And then eventually you saw those lines, right?
Exactly.
You don't even see it, but it turns to, ooh,
something's not right here.
Exactly.
It's not cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So then the lions pop up, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, mm-hmm. man.
That's happened to me plenty of times. Yeah. I remember one time being in Pakistan
crazy guys
and that
come
happened.
Up with the guns.
Yeah, or something like that. The little avalanche coming down, and I was like, maybe I should go down.
Happening.
And a guy came down, and he said, we're out of here. I said, oh, I thought so. He goes, what were you waiting for? I was like, well, I was thinking about it, and it felt like I should go down. He goes, never, ever, ever go against that feeling. You
first
get it.
Feeling, right?
The first one where you go, something's wrong. Get the fuck out immediately because it's right. That you're feeling that for a reason. It made me think about it.
Still go with your first feeling.
Yeah. The first feeling, whatever is the first one, is probably right.
Definitely.
I took that advice.
It's your instincts.
It's an instinct.
That advice is so much older than you. It's probably older than God, the prophet.
It's the original advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, dude. It's the original advice. Get the fuck out of here.
Get out of here.
We got to go right now.
You feel that way for a reason, yeah.
Oh, dude, I love that. Well, you know, that's also, you know, the way our lives are set up now, people just are so out of touch with that, those senses. You know?
Yeah, well, people live in the cities and
right,
stuff like that.
Right.
So you get used to, you know, that kind of lifestyle. But I've always enjoyed being in the far places. I think that was part of the reason I got into climbing, because I wanted to test myself and endure pain, stay out in a tent for 2 months on the glacier, go to the high altitudes, come back suffering. Just hammer myself, and then you find out what you really are. Go on a mountain by yourself, completely alone, stuff like that. I climbed the north face of Everest in one day all by myself. I was the only person on the mountain. I went in before anybody was there and just did it. And it was like, came down, did that. That was the greatest experience of my life because I knew who I was after that.
Did you know what you were up against?
Yeah.
You
I knew by that time I had gotten pretty big time experience where I'm like, I know what it's going to take to do this. And I was a professional.
The element of mastering
paid.
Yourself with yourself by yourself.
Yeah.
That's the reason that that's the reason that we have mates and get married, because we can't live with ourselves, not by ourselves, but with ourselves.
Yeah.
People say we can't live alone. No, we can't live with ourselves.
Yeah. That's why. Have you ever
that's
heard?
Why get, that's what, no, that's why we get married. That's why we have mates.
Yeah,
we can't live with ourselves.
For sure, man.
Fuck no.
Well, Mike, you know, people go on these I'm interested in doing this at some point, but you go on like a 10-day silent retreat, no talking for 10 days. And people come back and say they were literally going insane.
Absolutely. That's what Alexander the Great Father told him. He said, learn to trust nobody and be alone.
Because if you can be alone, you'll be the strongest man in the world. If you're all right about it. That's true.
Learn to be able to live alone. That's what he said, to live alone. Be able to live alone.
Yeah. It's true. If you can be that guy, you have a lot of power.
You're powerful when you can live alone. You'd be surprised because none of us never experienced it. Or we experienced it for such a short time. Then we say, hey, we don't want to do this no more. Most of us never experienced just being with ourselves and our thoughts and our past. And that stuff comes up or we've been assaulted or when bad stuff we saw happen to our mother. Oh, we don't want to deal with it. Hey, let me look, put on television, look at cartoons. Let's just get away from those ugly thoughts of what we have from the past.
Yeah.
You know, we have to sometimes embrace who we are. This is who we are. What the fuck? And I can't help it. This is the way the universe made us.
Mm-hmm.
We're not all the same. And that's why this is a special place, because we're not all the same. Every insect, every bug has a different print. Every lion, every tiger has different stripes, spots.
Yeah.
I mean, billions of animals and bugs and stuff, and they're all different. They have an identification. Yeah. Everything about life is about identification. A number, a print. Who's this guy? What bloodline he comes from? Even from insects, bugs, everything.
Wow. Joby, tell us about the Yeti.
Oh, my God.
You saw a Yeti?
I saw a Yeti.
Come on.
Oh, shit.
Fuck off.
I swear to God.
What? Cool guy, man. He ain't no fucking Yeti.
All right, check this out. You can't make this up. So here's the deal. So I was – when I told you that story about climbing that mountain 8 hours, I came down and we had to the base camp. So there were some other people were still coming down, so I had to wait. So my friend from Spain had some friends with him, like 12 people. And he had some people trekking in, and they were all there, and I knew some of those people, so I had dinner with them that night in their tent. They invited me. So towards the end of the night, everybody starts to leave and go to their own tent, and we had the dinner. Everything's finished. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in the corner of the tent. There's like five of us in the tent. Something grabbed the corner of the tent and started shaking it like this and then did it again. And we're thinking it's some friend of ours from another camp.
Fucking around.
And after a while, we think somebody's going to walk in. Nobody walks in. So we get up and like, what the fuck was going on with that? We walk out. As I'm the last guy to get out of the tent. So I open the tent and I notice everybody's standing there looking this way, just like this, just not moving at all, like looking at something. And it was a full moon. So it was really bright outside. And we were on a glacier, so it kind of reflected. I mean, it was very bright. It's like almost daylight. And I look over, and right there to the left, about 15 feet away from me, is this coiled up, crouched down, black, looked like
the Yeti's huge. Not black. Get out of here.
It's black, dude. It's fucking black. Everybody
Wait,
thinks,
let it
oh,
finish.
It's this white thing, you know? No. And a friend of mine had seen one before in the same area and told me what it looked like. He said, it moves real fast and it's all black. I'm like, okay. I didn't expect to see one. I just heard the story. But when I saw it, it was exactly what he said.
How big was it?
It was massive.
But it's crouched
it
down.
It was crouched down. It had kind of a nose of like a more of like a longer like a dog, but it was this jet black, really shiny long hair, and it had yellow eyes that really you could reflect in the sunset. It looked at us for a while, and then it just jumped, and it jumped over a pile of rocks. It was probably,
not a bear.
No. First, I thought, is that a dog? I'm like, man, that thing's huge. And then I thought it was a yak because the yaks were coming in to pick our equipment up. And I thought, it's like a big cow. And I thought, that's not a yak. And then it just kept sitting there looking at us. And then it just took off like in some supernatural flight over a 100-foot pile of rocks. What the crazy thing was, instinctively, I actually started moving towards it like I want to go up there and look. And there was a kid who worked for me, a Nepalese kid. He put his hand right here on my stomach. He was standing there watching the whole thing too. He worked in the kitchen. And he said, don't go up there. And I was like, did everybody just see what I saw? And everybody was like, yeah, holy shit. Okay. And when I saw it, I was just kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's a real animal that exists and seems to have supernatural quality that I never saw before, that's kind of elusive or something. But then after a couple of days, we were waiting to get picked up by the yaks, and I started taking all the food out of my tent because I'm thinking, man, why did it shake the corner I was in? I'm like, what did it want? And I was kind of glad to get out of there. I was afraid. It seemed like something that would just destroy you.
Do you take any psychedelics?
No. I like to smoke some marijuana, but that's it.
Yeah. I think it's pretty psychedelic.
That's what everybody else asked me. They said, what are you taking up on the mountain? I'm like, on the mountain, I take my toothbrush. That's about it. It's kind of lightweight going up there. That's a good break off from all the party time. But, that's
– I bet it's pretty psychedelic though, man.
It is. It is. It's like you're going to other planets.
Yeah.
You know, like you're in a different place that's so unique and so special and so high up there.
And the
breath. Your existence is just a big deal every day.
You know, like there's a place in India. It's an island outside of India that the people – they've been there from Africa for 60,000 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had no contact with human beings. If you contact with them, they start dying because we affect them. They've never been inoculated and stuff.
Right.
So they start dying. So I've seen them on film before. People have been killed by them. They've killed some visitors that try to come on their island They killed some
That's off the coast of India, right?
Yeah, they killed the people from the missionary. They killed the mission people that tried to change him to Christian and killed them.
This guy was documenting this whole thing, how he was going to bring Christianity to these people.
Yeah, real little. You know, they're really small.
He didn't make it onto the shore before they speared him and drug him into the forest.
Jesus loved
him,
and they hit him.
Oh, that's a rough one.
Yeah. Fuck that. Mike thinks we should civilize everyone, but I don't think so.
I think that we should understand every species of human being and who they are and where they are.
Yeah.
And how do they relate to us?
I'm interested in that. Yeah. You know? But can you go safely take a look? And
no, I just want to know what they believe is important. What do they think is important? Do they believe food is important? What do they hold sacred? What do they believe the God's given them? To make them special. Because we all believe that God has given us something to make us special. Black people believe God has given us rhythm, style, class to make us different from any other people and stuff. And every other people probably say, he gave us this, he gave us brains, intelligence, this because we do this, and he gave us this. And we all try to put that in together. Where did that come from? Did it stem from this? Where did that thought, where did the idea come from of us being one? Somebody being superior, somebody being inferior. Where does thought come from?
Right.
Who created those thoughts? Who created the thought of God?
Mm. It's just in us.
Yeah. This is what I found. I think we get it from animals. That we're born to worship. I think that's what happened. I think even the handicapped people were born since the beginning of time. Like idiots, you know, not deformed people. They even worshiped.
I agree with that. That's
you know what I mean? Yeah, sure. So you get a guy from Harvard that starts going into science and say there's no God, but then you have an idiot, a guy, the first person that was born 4 or 5 million years ago, he worshipped something. And you're going to tell me this guy's an educated guy, now he knows more than this person that's born 5 million years before him? Now you would say he is more advanced, but you think this guy knows more than the guy that's born 5 million years before him?
Maybe not.
Can you believe what that guy seen 5 million years before him? This guy could never dream of seeing, could never see in papers or books.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they have never seen it to write it down.
Yeah. Well, Mike, you said it, I don't know what we were doing. Maybe we were just in here recording an ad, but then we started talking afterwards and you said, it's natural. It's a natural instinct for an individual or a creature to ask for help. And then, Joby, you said when you're up on the mountain, you're doing a lot of praying, and I'm sure you're asking for a lot of assistance from nature and the universe to bring in whatever circumstances would be preferable. So maybe that's it, Mike, like what you were saying. It's just a natural instinct, you know, even if you're alone, to ask for help. Yeah,
I was just thinking that when you said it. That's what... To ask every person, every insect, everybody was in that situation asking for help. It's walking too long, needs water. It's to yourself, oh God. Or we call whoever created that word, God. That's what the person said, oh God, oh this.
Yeah.
Help me, please. Yeah. I don't care. I've said that all my life.
Mm. Yeah.
I said that when I was in the stages of not believing. I said that. Mm. That's how come we know we have God. I don't care. All the non-believers, all the atheists, when it's the last moment of our life, we say, oh, God, please help us. Or whatever we call God, oh, God, please help us. Or whatever we know that's bigger than us, we say, please help us. Even we don't believe, please help us. Mm. The moon, the sky, the birds, help us.
Mm. Joby, it's a real pleasure having you here, man.
Big time.
Thank you, man.
Big time.
Really appreciate you. Good luck. God bless you. You're the man. You're a fucking inspiration. Seriously.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be here. I got to meet somebody I was, you know, your hero of mine for sure.
So you're really awesome.
You've
you're
come back,
hero,
man.
Brother,
you've come back from stuff. I'm kind of coming back now, too. You know, that's why I figured I would get some. It would be nice to meet you today and visit about these things. I figured you'd give me some advice.
Hey, you know, listen to what I, from my experience, I found out that the God, it tests you. It tests you. It see how much of this you can take before you say, let's just be finished with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It wants to show you something. It wants to see how much you can take, how much you can handle of life. You say you love life, you want to live life. I'm going to show you life. Life is beautiful, but you have to accept the good and the bad as being beautiful. You can't accept the good. Oh, this is beautiful. Then we lose some of our life. Sucks. Life is beautiful because life gave us the ability to just know them on our journey in life. We met them. We loved them. We cared about them. They cared about us. That's the purpose of life. Just enjoy what we had, what we journeyed through it.
I needed it.
We all do. Because sometimes we don't understand, like, what is this thing? What is my purpose? Why am I here? Why do I have to go through this pain? Why do I have to go through this fear all the time? Why can't it just be peaceful all the time? Then it wouldn't be life.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be life. We have to take life at its term, life on life terms, not our, life on our terms. You know, we have to live life on life terms.
Joby, thank you again.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, brother.
I enjoyed
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
We'll you have come to hang
back.
Out more.
You're yeah. going to come back.
It'll be good. It'll be good.
Mike, amazing yeah. episode, man.
Yeah. You know what?
One of my favorites.
I keep thinking, you know, every time I think I'm making a mistake, but I keep thinking it's all about love. Love is the essence of life. I keep believing that. But I'm battling it with it. Thinking, come on. I
can't, you can't believe
yeah,
it.
I keep,
you yeah. can't be that.
Yeah, come on. Fuck the game. Is it that simple?
yeah.
Is it that simple?
I think so. Yeah.
That we're fighting for something that's just so right there. You can yeah. do it, but you just don't want to let go.
Yeah. it's like, no, I'm like, shit.
You're afraid to be happy. You're afraid to, you know, to enjoy. Because listen, when you really find real love, and so my first experience with real love, the first, you know, I've never experienced, I ran the other way.
Yeah.
There's no way that you're going to accept it full heartedly. It's scary shit to think that somebody really loves you regardless of all your flaws and everything, and you feel like you're a disgusting piece of shit. And somebody says, I love you, though. You might want to kill that person. How could you? I hate me. How do you love me? You know? Love is scary because it's so beautiful.
On that note,
how do we watch this show? Who do you talk
yeah,
to?
Yeah, we're going
to.
Well, you got a lot of great yeah. YouTube videos.
Yeah.
We'll check yeah. those out.
I got a bunch
what
of
is
my
the day that
stuff.
You're going to do this? Tell people the day that you're going to do this stuff.
Should be yeah. around the middle of May. So yeah. somewhere between probably like the 12th and the 25th in that few days.
Is there anywhere people can follow you and follow?
There'll
are you
be
on
a
Instagram?
Website. Yeah,
on
I'm on Instagram.
Media?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm all over Facebook and Instagram, so people can follow me from there. My
Joby Ogwin.
Yep. Joby Ogwin.
You know, he's just such a humble man. He's so lovable and stuff, doing the stuff that's death to find. I would be so scared my ego would get involved. I would make it like, this is nothing. You know, this is my ego. I'm scared because I'm so afraid.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. He's amazing, this guy. I love him. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Well, hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this
yeah,
really
this
special
is a beautiful
episode.
Day. This is a beautiful episode.
Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Mike, thank you. Thank you for the platform. Thank you for the opportunity. Hey, everybody. Check out our website, hotboxandpodcast.com. You can find all our episodes there, as well as listen on Podcast One, Until next time, I'm Evan Britton.
I'm Mike Tyson. You know, I always see guys like Joby. They're always great guys. They're just so humble and stuff.
Yeah.
They do just incredible things.
Awesome.
And know what greatness is? The definition of greatness is doing the most difficult thing to ease with the, you know, difficult thing in the world with the simplest of ease. And that's what you're doing. You're breaking record running up mountains. Take people days. He's doing it in hours.
I know.
Can you imagine? It takes me a couple of days to go up here, but I'm going to do it in a few hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck it.
If I, hey, I would do this in a few hours, you fat fuck. I'm doing it. Yeah, your guys are late. You're going to do it in 2 days. Yeah. Come on, man.
What are you doing? Nah. Taking a nap?
Yeah.
You're lazy. Yeah.
Exactly. You need, what's that diet? You need, what's that diet thing again you need?
Oh,
don't eat Debbie Donuts, man. Just something. Yeah. God, how do you do it in 8 hours? God.
I was really fit back in those days.
Fuck, dude. Still fit, bro.
Fit enough, I hope.
All right, y'all. Until next time, we're out of here.
Out of here, guys.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.